coming to you from deep inside the bowels of a great big empty. Get ready for another episode of The Home Defense Show with Skip Coriel.
Hello, American families. Welcome to this week's episode of The Home Defense Show. I'm your host, Skip Coriel. And if you love your family, care about them deeply, and want to learn how to protect them in every facet of your life, then you've come to the right place. Boy, we've got a great show for you today, folks. In segments 2 and 3, we are going to have Rick Echter from Detroit. He is the founder of the organization Legally Armed in Detroit. And we will be speaking about history today, the racist roots of gun control. We'll talk about gun control all over America. We'll go all the way back to the 16th, 17th century, and specifically Michigan, the beginning part of the 19th century, how the racist roots of gun control unfolded right here in Michigan. But before we get to that, I have a special guest, my honorary co-host for today, my son, 8-year-old Phoenix Coriel. Phoenix, welcome to the Home Defense Show.
Thank you.
Now, Phoenix, you and I were talking earlier today about some of your favorite things to do. Now, what is your second favorite thing to do in the whole world?
To play Minecraft.
Now, for my older listeners who may not be in tune with the 8-year-old world, what exactly is Minecraft?
Minecraft is a game where you can play with other people, but not open to the whole world. But all you have to do is, if there are other people playing Minecraft and you hook up to the same mobile hotspot as them, and there will be this place called Friends, and you tap on that, and if there's a world right there on the screen, then you tap on that, then you can actually play with the person, like actually see them.
Wow. So this is something that you do on your tablet or your Kindle or something like that?
Yeah.
Wow. And you really like that. You like building imaginary worlds?
Yeah, you can do that too. You can build worlds.
Well, I've seen you do it, and you are very good at Minecraft, if I don't mind saying so.
Actually, Cedar's better.
Well, Cedar's 12 years old. He's had more practice, but I think someday you're going to be just as good as him, maybe even better. What do you think?
Probably not.
All right. Well, what is your favorite thing in the whole wide world to do?
Play with my sister Amethyst.
Now, how old is your sister Amethyst?
7.
So she's 7 and you're 8. You and Amethyst, what do you do together that's so much fun?
We like play games. Sometimes we play puppy, where I'm the puppy and Amethyst is my owner. Sometimes we play cat, where Amethyst is cat, I'm her owner. Sometimes we play monkey, where Amethyst is the monkey and I'm her owner and stuff like that.
That sounds like a really fun game. And, you know, sometimes both of you play with Daddy. You know, sometimes you guys will play like doctor or something, and I'm the patient, and you guys do all kinds of weird stuff to me to heal me. You'll pretend like you're cutting me open and taking out my organs and stuff like that. So we definitely have a lot of fun playing together, don't we?
Yes.
Now, as a reminder for all my listeners, how should they teach their children? Say they have an 8-year-old boy or a 7-year-old daughter, what should they teach their kids about firearm safety? What should an 8-year-old do if he sees a gun all by itself, like laying on the table? What should he do?
He should not touch, turn around, exit the area, and tell an adult.
Absolutely. Who would be a good adult to tell?
Your parents.
I think you are a very smart boy. Only 8 years old. You know, There are some adults who aren't as safe around firearms as you are. So I congratulate you, Phoenix.
Thanks.
All right. Now, you've got, you are a homeschooler. And one of the challenges in homeschooling is making it so you can meet other kids who are actually good for you. Now, one of the things that Mommy and Daddy are doing this year is you're going to go to a homeschool co-op. That's where homeschoolers cooperate with each other to help educate their kids. And every Friday, you're going to be doing something special, aren't you?
Yes.
What are you going to be doing? You've got like three classes that you're going to take on Fridays now?
Yep. Three classes. I'm going to do beginning Spanish. What's the next one? STEAM Adventures and art practice.
Art practice. What is this STEAM Adventures? That sounds exciting. What is that about?
The STEAM Adventures is like where you... Wait, I think I'm not going to STEAM Adventures. I think I'm going to something like that's called like Fun Things, where we like visit the Grand Canyon.
Oh, marvelous things and places, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, it sounds like you're going to have a lot of fun, and I bet you're even going to make some friends that are your age.
Maybe.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. What about girls? Are you interested in girls yet? You're 8 years old.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, I think for right now, just go ahead and play with your 7-year-old sister, Amethyst. You guys have so much fun. Right now, Daddy's going to get back to the Home Defense Show. But you, boy, you've helped us out. You've been on for like 7 minutes now, Phoenix. So I want to thank you for educating all of my listeners about Minecraft and firearm safety and homeschooling. So, Phoenix, we are going to have you back on the Home Defense Show again, and we'd like you to have a good day. Thank you, Phoenix.
You're welcome.
All right, son. You head on in with Mom now, and you do homeschooling or whatever it is she tells you to do, okay?
Okay.
I know that certainly works for me. All right, love you, buddy.
Love you, too.
Bye-bye. All right, folks, that was my 8-year-old son, Phoenix Coriel. One of the loves of my life. I just love my children. And you know what? That's why I carry a gun, so I can protect my kids and my wife, everyone who is important to me. Because let's face it, carrying a gun is a pain in the butt. It's a big, bulky, heavy piece of metal. But when I think about anyone hurting my kids or my wife, there's a part of me that just goes bonkers. And I'm not going to let anybody hurt my family. That little kid, he is just way too cute. Awesome little boy. We'll have Amethyst on. Maybe we can get her on next week. But you know what? She is so shy, it's hard to get her on. But when I can get her talking, she says some awesome things. So, all right, folks, let's get right down to the news. I was looking here on bearingarms.com. We're going to be talking about gun control, the history of gun control in segments 2 and 3. But here we've got the present reality of gun control. And we're talking about London, Londonistan here. The headline reads, "Since banning guns and knives didn't work, London mayor wants to ban cars." You know, the terrorists over there, they're killing people with guns. So they banned the guns. Now the terrorists are killing them with knives. So they banned the knives. Now the terrorists are killing them with cars. So what are they going to do? Let's read the article and find out. "When someone is determined to kill as many people as humanly possible in as short a time as humanly possible, they're going to find a way to do it. If you take away the usual tools to kill people, they'll get creative. No matter what, they'll find a way to murder people if they choose. So, when governments ban the tools used by these people in a misguided attempt to prevent future attacks, all they're doing is depriving law-abiding citizens of these tools for non-criminal use. They don't actually stop evil men from committing mass murder. Over in England, they haven't seemed to figure that out yet." You know, I got news for you, folks. They haven't figured it out here in America yet. It's like... 40% of the population are totally brain dead and they can't figure out common sense. A mass attack triggered a gun ban. Then they decided to ban knives. Now they're looking to ban cars, following yet another attack. Well, at least in some parts of the city. Three people were injured after police say a car collided with a number of cyclists and pedestrians before crashing into barriers that line the Houses of Parliament. Khan told BBC Radio, I think that's their mayor. It reminds me of that second Star Trek movie, The Wrath of Khan. We could title this one The Idiocy of Khan or The Lunacy of Khan. Khan told BBC Radio that making certain areas only available to pedestrians would provide more safety to both citizens and buildings in the surrounding area. Folks, that is the same illogic for gun control. It's not the idiot driving the car, it's the car. So we will ban the car from these certain areas, and then everything will be fine. That didn't work for guns. It didn't work for knives. How do you expect that to work for cars? It's like, let's double down on stupid. In this case, they're tripling down on stupid. Wow. Oh boy, this is a day to be ashamed of being a Brit. Man. In other words, they're still not getting the picture. Then again, I'm pretty sure Sadiq Khan wouldn't get the picture if you drew it in crayon right before his very eyes, explained it in small words of no more than two syllables, and promised him a lollipop if he paid very close attention. I think the author's right about that. This guy just doesn't get it. I mean, there is a man so wrapped in his own privilege that he can't imagine why anyone would need to carry around a knife without ever thinking of the people who routinely have to do simple things like open boxes, much less protect themselves from knife-armed thugs roaming wild on London's streets. And there's plenty. London is now the most dangerous city in the world. He thinks that if he bans cars from certain areas of London, then terrorists and other madmen won't find another way to murder innocent people. Well, here in America, we figured out real quick on September 11th, 2001, they can use an airliner. They will use any means at their disposal to kill infidels. That's the truth, folks. They hate us. They want us dead. They'll do whatever they got to do. The answer isn't to disarm you and me. The answer is maybe we should disarm them. Maybe we should get them out of our country. London is a city of millions of people. Imagine how this would have been different if the terrorist had faced even one armed citizen. You know, folks, when I hear stuff like this, I think, you know what? I wish I'd been there. You know, places like Sandy Hook, you know, the airliner on 9/11. I just think if I had been there, then maybe I could have stopped it. And preferably with my firearm. I really don't relish the idea of taking on armed terrorists with my bare hands. But thanks to our politicians, you do what you gotta do. But it's London. They don't have that option there, so instead, it's a city of lambs to the slaughter. That was written by Tom Knighton. He's the regular author over there at BarryArms.com. He's a Navy veteran, too. A former newspaperman, a novelist, and a blogger. You know, I should check out his novels. I'm going to go to Amazon.com and check out Tom Knighton, see what kind of novels. I hope they're good. I'm always looking for a good novel. Which reminds me, I'm working on The Blind Man's Rage. I'm on page 115, folks. I am halfway through The Blind Man's Rage, and it's all coming together. I have finally figured out who the traitor is that keeps betraying General Rodney T. Branch. And boy, is he going to be mad when he finds out. Oh boy, things are coming to a head in my little imaginary world. Well, okay, folks, that's about all the time we have for in segment one of episode 92 of the Home Defense Show. We're going to have a two-minute break here while we are away. Check out our sponsors, firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical, and find out what your family can do to protect yourself from the criminal justice system. And then go to elitefirearms.us, call up Larry Jackson, and get the right firearm for your family the first time around. Don't waste $600-$700 on the wrong gun. Get it right the first time. And then, of course, go to Amazon.com and do a search on Skip Coriel, The God Virus. Check that out. Or maybe Civilian Combat. I've got 11 books out there. Check them all out. All right, folks, when we come back to segment 2 and 3, we will have none other than Rick Ector from Legally Armed in Detroit. We'll be talking about the racist roots of gun control. All right, this is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. We'll be back in 2 minutes. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
My name is Cedar Coriel. Welcome to the Home Defense Show with my dad, Skip Coriel. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. Boy, we are speaking now with Rick Ector from Legally Armed in Detroit. Rick, welcome to the Home Defense Show.
Hey, man, thank you for having me. It's always a privilege to be here and have an opportunity to talk to you and have your audience, you know, check out and see what we're talking about.
Well, Rick, you know, it is a pleasure to talk with you either in person or on the phone. I think this is maybe the third time you've been on the Home Defense Show. Have you been on Frontlines of Freedom radio show yet? I don't remember.
I'm not for sure. I know I've been with you on this show a couple of times, but hey, man, give me a call. I'll go with you to the other one, too.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm due, I think in October, I'm doing a 2-hour special on the Frontlines of Freedom. Frontlines of Freedom, that's the number one military talk show in the country. We're on like 150 stations nationwide, and I'm the co-host for that.
Oh, wow.
I would love to talk with you then on that show as well. So, hey, you'll be getting a phone call from me about Frontlines of Freedom. So, but today...
Sounds like a blast, man. Call me.
I will do that. But today we are on the Home Defense Show with Rick Ector. Tell me real quickly, Legally Armed in Detroit. What's Rick Ector all about?
Well, my station in life has morphed, you know, a long time ago, and it's only from my perspective that 14 years seems like a long time ago, but 14 years ago, I was robbed at gunpoint in my own driveway coming home from work, and I had a pivotal decision to make. Do I run away from my own home in my own neighborhood and abandon it and maybe get a few dollars at a fire sale, or do I stay and fight? Do I engage in some activity? Do I get training? Do I learn how to become my own first responder? Do I learn how to defend myself? You know, being robbed at gunpoint was a harrowing experience. It was weird. It was kind of scary. It was all sorts of things all at once. And I never thought it could happen, you know, literally on my front porch. So became a gun rights advocate. And I became a firearms trainer. Other than that, my focus has shifted a little bit. Not only am I looking to train people in urban Detroit, my focus shifted after I saw a story on TV about a woman who was raped and her body was discarded on the streets of Detroit. And I decided to become more active in that movement. And what I did was I put out a solicitation for any woman who wanted to learn about guns and their role in self-defense to meet me at a gun range. That first year, I had 50 brave, intrepid souls take me up on that offer. And 7 years later, we had a one-day event just a couple of months ago where we trained 700 women how to operate a handgun in a day. So
in a
nutshell, that's me, and that's my story going back about 13 years.
Wow. Well, Rick, that was awesome. You know, I knew you were doing that over there, but I didn't know, boy, how many women you were training over there? 700. That's
in a day,
awesome
man. Hey, we were doing it, and I had a lot of people giving me some assistance. I had approximately 50 firearms instructors, all credentialed and safe trainers working with me. You know, we put aside, you know, our walls for the day, and we become partners and comrades in the cause. I had a gun range donate, you know, their facility. I had Aguila ammunition donate. It was like 13,000 rounds of ammunition, you know. It's just been an incredible effort. NRA, ILA gave away some canvas tote bags. It's just a great project, man, that has grown over the years. And I would love not only to see it continue to grow here locally. If there's anybody out there that's curious about replicating and duplicating what we've done here in their own community, man, I'd love to talk to them and share my thoughts on how they can do the same thing in their own area.
Well, you know, Rick, I am interested in that. I really, really am. Next year, when you do that, you know, if there's room for me to come over there and volunteer my time, as an instructor, I'd love to do that. If there's not, that's fine. I'd love to come over and maybe do a remote show.
There will always be room for you. And as a matter of fact, okay, if there was a room, I'll make room. You know
okay.
what? And if you wanted to not only help out, you might want to do an installment of your show from the event and talk to all the hundreds of women that are going to be there. It'd be awesome.
You know, I think it would. I think that would make a really good home defense show. You know, I can't talk to hundreds on one show because we have limitations. But
who said you can't, man?
Now, that would be a long show. But, yeah, I definitely want to do that. Rick, you know, God bless you for what you're doing over there. That is really good stuff. And maybe later we can talk about how maybe we can get something over there here on the west side of the state as well, and we could bring you over here, and maybe you could do the same thing over here that you're doing over there, because, hey, women over here need help as well.
Hey, man, I have gun, will travel. I just say when and where, and I'll be there. I'm like Paladin.
All right. Yeah, I love that show. We're telling people how old we are now, Rick. Better watch.
Right. Somebody's actually going to Google that show and look it
that's
up.
Right.
Like,
that's right.
That came up. Rick, is that old? Wow.
All right. Now, Rick, I listened to you were on a show last week or something. I caught it on YouTube, and it was about the racist roots of gun control. You know, specifically here in Michigan, you were telling the story of Dr. Ajin Sweet. Is it Ajin or Ocean Sweet? I call it
Ajin.
Okay, Ajin Sweet. All right. Well, Rick, you know, for a lot of our listeners, the idea that gun control is racist is probably new to them. So can you talk about that for a while?
Yeah, if you ever want to understand how gun control really has nothing to do about safety, you know, just take a look at the Dr. Ajin Sweet case. This is a story that happened in 1925 in the city of Detroit. At that time, black people in the city of Detroit were approximately only 11% of the population. We were a small but tight community. We were still undergoing what we call the the Great Migration. This is when black people were migrating from the southern states, from the rural environments to up north, you know, like Detroit, where there were factory jobs and a means of people earning money to give them a better way of life. So, you know, that's how Dr. Ossian Sweet's parents came to this area. But as he was a kid, he was rather intelligent. He went to medical school, became a doctor, and he was providing his medical services in his community. And as he became more prominent, he wanted, you know, nicer things, not uncommon for people to want to do. So he wanted a nice home on another side of town. And, it, you know, and when he started inquiring as to purchasing this home on the nicer side of town of Detroit, you know, he found out that there were racial covenants in the deed restrictions. You know, it was legal during that day and age for people to put restrictions on who you could sell certain property to. There was a fear that if a black man, even if he was a doctor or a physician and added value that, to that community, that he would cause their homes to decrease in value.
Hmm.
So anyway, he found a nice couple to sell him the home. And as he purchased the home and the previous owners vacated it, he enlisted the help of some family and friends to grab all of his belongings and to move into the house in the dead of night. It didn't take long for the neighbors to realize that someone had now purchased the home and was there. Eventually, as word got out, there were crowds amassing every night in front of his residence to protest and to try to scare them away, all the way until, you know, it reached the climax when published news reports said that there were 200 people who were about ready to riot in front of his home.
Hmm.
Well, one thing led to another on this one interesting night, and they started throwing things into the home. They started firing in the home. And Dr. Sweet and the fellow residents who were there to protect Dr. Sweet, you know, they produced their guns and they returned fire, and one person in the group of 200 people, you know, was shot and killed. And that's when all of a sudden the police who were on the scene monitoring this whole event decided to take action. They didn't arrest anyone in the crowd. They arrested Dr. Sweet, his family and friends who were in the home.
Hmm.
Long story short, this was the trial of the century. His defense attorney was none other than Dr. Clarence Darrow. The judge in this case was Frank Murphy. If you're a Michigan resident, particularly around southeastern Michigan, you know that Mr. Frank Murphy's name is on the big courthouse downtown. He went on to become a Supreme Court justice, mayor of Detroit, and I believe he was also governor of Michigan. So he's a very historical figure who figured prominently in this case. But at the end of the day, Dr. Sweet in 1925 was acquitted of murder by an all-white jury, and that's why we have what's called, here at least in Michigan, the Castle Doctrine. Your home is your castle, and you have a right to protect it. And in response to that verdict, the state of Michigan enacted the Michigan Firearms Act in 1927. This Firearms Act has all the most onerous, restrictive gun laws ever devised by gun grabbers and put anti-gun legislation on the books. And that's how we know for sure, at least in Detroit and the state of Michigan, that gun laws are racist and they have absolutely nothing to do with safety. They were devised to make it easy for black lawyers who decided to move in white neighborhoods to be victimized by the Klan.
Wow. Boy, Rick, that's incredible. I mean, I knew all that, but I didn't know all of the details as you've recounted them, so I'm glad we had you.
Well, I tell you, there's a great book on the subject. Stephen Boyle, I believe, is the author, and the name of the book is called ARC, as A-R-C, ARC of Justice. It's an awesome book, and it goes into a lot of great detail. I don't make a dime off of it because I didn't write it or publish it, but go to Amazon and get it. It's all about you know, the case, and it will give you an abundance of material and background information on the case.
Okay. The author's name again? What is that?
I believe it's Stephen Boyle. But the name of the book is called Ark of Justice,
Got
the Ossian Sweet Story.
All right. Well, I will definitely pick that one up. All right. Now, Rick, we're out of time here for the first segment. But when we come back, you know, I'd like to talk more about that Public Act of 1927 and get more into the details on that and how that played out all the way up to the year 2001. So, folks, we're going to take a two-minute break. When we come back, we'll be speaking again with Rick Ector from Legally Armed in Detroit, all about the racist roots of gun control. Over the two-minute break, go ahead and check out our sponsors. Check out firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical, and then check out elitefirearms.us. Call Larry Jackson, see what he can do to help your family choose the right firearm for you. This is Skip Coriel and Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
This is Felix Coriel on the Home Defense Show. Always use guns safely and wisely. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if life was like the movies and the good guys always won? In today's world, if you're forced to use your firearm to protect yourself, you will need protection. Firearms Legal Protection is here for you. FLP provides you with seasoned, experienced attorneys that handle your criminal and civil matters as a result of you protecting yourself. FirearmsLegal.com provides its members with uncapped attorney's fees, bail bond protection, and coverage in all 50 states. We are not a reimbursement plan. You can access uncapped attorney's fees for as low as $10 a month. Firearms Legal members are provided with educational services, training videos, and access to our vast national attorney network. While you're protecting yourself, let Firearms Legal protect you.
Listen up, folks. This is important. There are plenty of legal protection services out there, but none will protect you as well as Firearms Legal Protection. This is the one I use and the only one I recommend. Visit firearmslegal.com/MidwestTactical and protect your family now. Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. There's your host, Skip Coriel, here in segment three. All right, in the last segment, we were speaking with Rick Ector from Legally Armed in Detroit, all about the racist roots of gun control, and we want to continue on that, along that vein. But the 1927 Public Act, it set up, I guess, concealed carry permits here in the state of Michigan and something called the county gun boards. Rick, talk a little more in detail about that.
Yeah, the most onerous set of gun laws that ever existed. You know, it created county gun boards. This is like every county, you know, it would be comprised of a certain number of people. In its latest iterations, back before they were abolished a few years ago, it was comprised of the county sheriff, the county prosecutor, and another local official. And if you wanted to get a concealed pistol license, you had to go before this tribunal and apply for a license. Now, before we went to shall issue licensing back in 2001, traditionally, the gun laws, you know, the racism baked into the process still existed. You know, they couldn't be so overt about it, but they would say, well, you know, if you want it, you have to show just cause, and being afraid that you're going to be a crime victim in a town that can't control crime is not good enough. You'd have to be a business owner who generated tens of thousands of dollars in revenue, and you're responsible for, you know, safely transporting this money from the business, you know, to the local bank. It just shows that we tolerate, you know, a lot of things from a lot of politicians, and we don't understand the reason why. I mean, how is it that we allow the government to tell us that we can't observe our Second Amendment right to protect and defend ourselves in a town like Detroit, where crime has been a consistent, persistent problem for so long, but you still need to have permission from some ominous board that meets once a month and figure out whether you're good enough. And you know, it's just awful, you know, and I'm so glad that this law was struck down, you know, mm-hmm. and it took the leadership of someone like a previous governor, John Engler, and the Michigan legislature to make this thing happen, because the anti-gun folks, what they were talking about, they were saying that if you let ordinary law-abiding citizens who could pass a background check have access to a gun on their person outside of a home, there's going to be blood running in the streets. There's going to be shootout at the OK Corral. You know, all these people are going to die who don't needlessly have to. And all it was hot air. We, as a matter of fact, are required by that very same statute to produce statistics committed by individuals who have concealed pistol licenses. And we have actual data that proves that people who are concealed pistol license holders are even more law-abiding than law enforcement officers.
Yeah. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, when I hear that, some people don't like to hear that because they like to think that every police officer is as honest as they are. And most of the time, that's the case, but not always.
Not always. There's always a few in the barrel. And CPL holders are even more honest than those.
Yep. You know, Rick, you know, back in 1927, they passed that public act that set up the county gun boards. And, you know, back then, the KKK, the Klan, was still very strong up even in Michigan. And I know the Klan lobbied to get that law passed so that they mm-hmm. could, you know, keep the guns out of the hands of black people. But, you know, over the decades, boy, that turned around and that affected white people as well, because by the 1970s, 1980s, very few people could get concealed pistol licenses from the county gun board. It had morphed into something really, really restrictive. And boy, it took us decades to get rid of that terrible law.
And to echo your point, you know, to drive that home, you know, anytime the law is being used to deprive any person, however unpopular one group might believe the other group to be, over time, this form of oppression will morph itself into some greater system that's going to impact people at large. We can't tolerate any class of people having their rights trampled upon by the government. If we do that, we license it, and we basically give them our consent that eventually one day they could take that very same law and apply it to us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Rick, the way I understand it, let's go back, you know, maybe 150, 200 years, to pre-Civil War and then after Civil War, the racist roots of gun control on a national level. I believe there were a lot of laws passed down in the South before the Civil War that made it illegal for free black people to possess firearms. But then after the Civil War, you know, after the Emancipation Proclamation, you know, the South, they were terrified of reprisals from freed slaves. And they didn't they pass a lot of gun control laws that were kind of veiled
or
shrouded?
They passed the cover story because, well, hey, we actually made these people slaves and we treated them badly. We're worried about reprisals. We're worried about payback. I mean, you know, and what whether it was true or not, I suspect that it was more blather than anything else. You know, you were a slave, now you're free. You're more caught up in your freedom than trying to, you know, get payback. But here's the thing. Even though they were previously slaves and now they're free and they had these small, tight-knit communities, if they did not have guns to protect themselves, they would be, you know, vulnerable to the night riders, the people who come in the thick of night, you know, ostensibly on horseback to create terror, you know, in their community. So when anyone talks about gun control, you know, I look at it not only in its current form, I also look at it from its historical racist roots, man. There's nothing good that can come out of gun control. It's all about victimizing a group of people by the government and the powers that be.
Yeah. Well, Rick, it's interesting. In the first segment of the show, we always do a segment that talks about what's going on in the news. And today we went to bearingarms.com and we were reading an article about in London, they have Mayor Khan. You know, first they outlawed guns, then they outlawed knives, and now they have people killing other people with cars, deliberately murdering them on the streets. So now they're passing laws about where cars can be and where they can't be. So, you know, here in America, we have pistol-free zones. In London, they have automobile-free zones. It's like, where does it end? Where does this control stop?
It doesn't end. It doesn't end. And it really highlights the underlying point. The underlying point is that it's not about guns, it's not about knives, it's not about automobiles. What it is the human condition, it's the human mind and the human heart. We have a mind and we have a heart problem. If some sick, twisted individual has it within their heart and their mind that they're going to hurt someone, no law is going to deter them. Evil always will find a way. If you're into the Bible, we know that Cain slew Abel with a rock. We can't outlaw rocks. I mean, the planet is just one big giant rock itself. There's a rock everywhere.
Just
make it easy so that everybody has access to rocks. That's what I say.
There you go. Hey, I am definitely with you on that one, Rick. You know, because the old saying, the only way to stop a bad guy with a gun is with, and Rick says?
Hey, either a rock or another gun.
A good guy with a gun, absolutely. You know, there will always be classes of people who want to dominate other people. I mean, it's been that way, you know, since the dawn of time. There's always a tyrant. And when those tyrants get control, when they get power, oh man, it's Katie bar the door. You know, in our case here in America, you know, in the South, it was racist people who felt they could own other people and make them work for them and take away their freedom. And boy, it took a long time to, you know, reverse that. And we're still feeling the effects of it. And we're still working on it. There's still things that we need to do here in America to provide equity and balance. But in your mind, you know, we've got about 3 minutes here. How do you see the relations between the black and white communities today? Is it where it should be? Is it not looking so good? What's your opinion?
My perspective is that things are much better than they have been. I mean, time, you know, basically is a healer of all things and conditions that we find ourselves in. You know, just time, man, time. And we find that we are coming together, man. We are shopping in the same municipal, you know, shopping malls. We're living in the same communities. We're going to the same schools. We're worshiping in the same churches. Man, all it is time. Time and tolerance and looking beyond such superficial things as color. You know, we're going to get there, man. It's just a question of how long it's going to take. But, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day. And a race-conscious society will take a while for us to eradicate that from our memories and our minds. But we're going to be okay, and we're going to survive, and we're going to find a way to love each other the way we're supposed to.
There you go. Now, that's nice and positive. That's certainly what I like, and I think that's the attitude that we have to take, Rick. I think the vast amount of people, whether they're black or whether they're white, they want to get along with each other. They want to be nice to each other. You know, they want to be friends. But there's that tiny minority that just wants to drive a wedge and divide people. And, you know, whether it's the media or politicians, they can do an awful lot of damage. So that means guys like you and I, you know, I mean, we're on the radio, so people can't tell. I mean, you're a black guy, I'm a white guy. But, man, we are really good friends. And we're always going to be really good friends. So, you know, just let that be an example. We'll start with Rick and Skip, and we'll build on that. And eventually, we're going to have us a good world. So, Rick, we're out of time. That's right, we will. We're out of time. But before we go, tell us where we can find out about all things Rick Ector.
Hey, the best way, and I tell people this facetiously all the time, is Google me. My first name is Rick, R-I-C-K. Last name is Ector, E-C-T-O-R. You will find me on Facebook. You'll find me on LinkedIn. You'll find me on Twitter. You'll even find me on Instagram. My blog is legallyarmedindetroit.com, and my website is DetroitCCW.com. But as I stated at the lead, Rick, R-I-C-K, Ector, E-C-T-O-R, will take you to everything I have. Just go to Google. Google loves me. All my intellectual property is out there.
All right. All right, Rick. That is just totally, totally awesome. You have been fantastic today. I want to thank you for being on the Home Defense Show, Rick.
Hey, man. It's always a pleasure when I'm on. Thank you for having me. And I look forward to talking to you about that other show you got, man. It sounds
awesome.
Rather intriguing.
All right, Rick. We will do it. Okay, folks, we have got a 2-minute break now. While you are away, go ahead and check out Arc of Justice by Stephen Boyle. Go on Amazon.com. And as long as you're on Amazon, check out Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by none other than yours truly, Skip Coriel. This is Skip Coriel on the Home Defense Show. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about the racist roots of gun control going all the way back into the 17th century. All right, folks, this is Skip Coriel on Home Defense Show. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Welcome to my dad's Home Defense Radio Show. You're gonna love it.
Hey folks, I want to tell you about my book, Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book. More and more people across the country are seeing the dangers in society and are deciding to carry concealed to protect themselves and their families. My new book lays it out step by step. It'll teach you how to protect and defend the ones you love. Get the benefit of 17 years of teaching experience and a lifetime of training for this important role in society and in your family. You can get Civilian Combat real easy. Just go to Amazon.com, search on Skip Coriel, Civilian Combat, and it'll pop right up there. Don't put it off any longer. Get Civilian Combat, the Concealed Carry Book by yours truly, Skip Coriel.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I host Frontlines of Freedom, a weekly syndicated military talk radio show. One of my co-hosts is Skip Coriel, the host of this show. We cover things that impact military and veteran communities, and we do it from the veteran's perspective. The show is broadcast across the nation and is also available as a podcast on our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please join Skip and me weekly on Frontlines of Freedom.
This is Skip Coriel from the Home Defense Show, and I want you to have the very best handgun that money can buy. And that's why we recommend you visit Larry Jackson at Elite Firearms and Training. As a concealed carry instructor, I see people every week out on the range with guns they can't shoot properly because they didn't know what to buy. That will never happen at Elite Firearms and Training. Larry Jackson will personally fit you with your very own personal defense pistol. So call Larry Jackson today at 616-299-8715 or visit elitefirearms.us.
Skip, it's time for our Armed America Report. What do you have?
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right of the people to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, father-daughter bonding time came to an abrupt end during an assault in Memphis, Tennessee, but the would-be victim had a gun in his car and saved his child from further harm. The dad was carrying his infant out of a fast food restaurant to his vehicle after lunch. Along the way, four men attacked him, despite the fact that he had a child in his arms. During the scuffle, the father dropped the baby. At one point, someone in the gang had the young father in a chokehold, according to reports to a 911 dispatcher. The dad reached his car, retrieved a handgun, and shot one of the culprits. The troublemakers fled in a car, driving to a nearby fire station to get help for the wounded party. The injured man was taken to a hospital for medical care, and all four aggressors have since been charged.
Thanks, Colonel. After being attacked by four men, this young father-daughter combo are lucky to be alive. People need to realize that most attacks are extremely sudden and incredibly violent. We're talking about an ambush situation where the bad guys will almost always have the element of surprise. And in a situation like this, I can't think of anything more frightening than having to fight for the life of your young child against four attackers. But even though this father was ambushed and outnumbered, there is one advantage he possessed that these attackers had not anticipated. This man was fighting for his daughter. And that alone can give a man more determination and drive and strength than he's ever had in his entire life. When I think of someone trying to hurt my family, my warrior mentality goes into hyperdrive. It's kind of like Braveheart on steroids. At that point in time, even though the odds are against you, your mind becomes incredibly focused on the task at hand, and that is to protect the ones you love. Your attackers don't have that edge. All they have is rage, hatred, selfishness, or the need for their next drug fix. But the love of a dedicated and trained parent goes way beyond anything selfish, because the love of a mother or father will always trump the selfish rage of a stranger. There is, however, one thing this parent could have done to better protect his child. His firearm was not readily accessible to him when he needed it the most. The gun in your car only helps you when you are inside your car. This father had to fight his way to his gun before he could save his daughter's life. But if the gun had been in his holster where it belonged, this whole episode could have been over within 3 seconds without having to drop the baby. Aside from that, this young father did a great job fighting off his attackers, and Frontlines of Freedom gives him a hearty military salute.
And he well deserves it.
Okay, folks, welcome back to the Home Defense Show. This is your host, Skip Coriel. Great segments 2 and 3 with Rick Ector from Legally Armed in Detroit. I'm proud to have Rick as my personal friend and professionally. Awesome, awesome guy. Check out Rick Ector. Just Google his name, Rick Ector, Legally Armed in Detroit. And boy, he has a very high profile on the internet. We're going to be speaking this segment more on racist roots of gun control, going way back to the 17th and 18th century. But first, some personal business. One of my good friends, Donald E. Lauder, died about a week ago. Don is my neighbor, lives right across the road from me, and he is part of my neighborhood watch, or he was, a valuable member, super neighbor, one of the best neighbors I've ever had. Don is a retired lieutenant colonel in the Army, a Vietnam combat vet, former artillery officer. He had a long battle with pancreatic cancer. He fought hard. He fought like an Army Ranger. And I respect that. I respect him.
You know, I just wanted to give him a moment of silence because he deserves it. I was at his memorial just a few days ago, right here in lovely downtown Martin, Michigan. And it was a beautiful service that they had for Don. His wife set it all up, and I thought the pastor did a good job. But at the very end of this memorial, a lot of singing, scripture, a little bit of preaching. But at the very end, they did something that I've never seen done before. At the very end, the pastor said, at this time, to close out our service, I would like every veteran in the church to stand and come forward and give Don one final salute. And gosh, I got to tell you, that just moved me. As a veteran of the United States Marine Corps, I mean, I stood, and I don't like being the center of attention, but I walked to the front, and there were about 20 veterans. I'm 60 years old. I was probably the youngest guy there. Most of the guys looked like they were in Vietnam or Korea, maybe a few World War II vets who could barely make it up there. But I stood in line, and there was a picture of Don right on center stage, and one at a time, we all walked up in front of Don's picture. We snapped to attention, gave him our best military salute. And I got to tell you, I saw Don every week out mowing his lawn, you know, getting the mail. And before he came down with his illness, we would talk a lot right out in front. We'd stand in the middle of the road because it's a country road. And we'd just chew the fat. We'd just talk about what's going on. I mean, he loved to build his sailboat. He loved karate. He was a third degree black belt. Just a fighter, a warrior, every bit an Army Ranger, right up until the very end. And I just want to thank God for giving me a neighbor like Don Lauder, retired Lieutenant Colonel, Army Ranger. Don, you will be missed. And my prayers go out to your wife, Rita, and your entire family. Now we're just going to give 5 seconds, a moment of silence. Pray for Rita and her family. Starting right now. All right, folks, thank you for bearing with me on that personal item that I really wanted to get taken care of. All right, now let's talk about the early racist roots of gun control. In order to help me with that, I have gone to Clayton E. Kramer. He published an article back in 1995. I'm at constitution.org. The article is called The Racist Roots of Gun Control. And according to Clayton Kramer, the historical record provides compelling evidence that racism underlies gun control laws, and not in any subtle way. Throughout much of American history, governments openly stated that gun control laws were useful for keeping blacks and Hispanics in their place and for quieting the racial fears of whites. And actually, Rick Ector mentioned that as well. Racist arms laws predate the establishment of the United States. This is not surprising. Blacks in the New World were often slaves, and revolts against slave owners often degenerated into less selective forms of racial warfare. The perception that free blacks were sympathetic to the plight of their enslaved brothers and the dangerous example that blacks could actually handle freedom often led New World governments to disarm all blacks, both slave and free. Starting in 1751, the French Black Code required Louisiana colonists to stop any blacks and, if necessary, beat any black carrying any potential weapon such as a cane. If a black refused to stop on demand and was on horseback, the colonist was authorized to shoot to kill. Wow. Boy, I mean, stop and frisk is bad enough. But Shoot to Kill, boy, that's even worse. 1751, the French Black Code. In Louisiana, the fear of Indian attack and the importance of hunting to the colonial economy necessitated that slaves sometimes possess firearms. The colonists had to balance their fear of the Indians against their fear of their slaves. As a result, French Louisiana passed laws that allowed slaves and free blacks to possess firearms only under very controlled conditions. Similarly, in the 16th century, the colony of New Spain, boy, way back in the 16th century, terrified of a black slave revolt, prohibited all blacks, free and slave, from carrying arms. Often the relationship between racism and gun control was direct and obvious. On other occasions, the connection was more complex. One example of a complex relationship between economic struggle, slavery, and possession of arms can be found in 17th century Virginia. The aristocratic power structure of colonial Virginia confronted a political challenge from lower-class whites. These poor whites resented how the men who controlled the government used that power to concentrate wealth into a small number of hands. These wealthy feeders at the government trough would have disarmed poor whites, but the threat of both Indian and pirate attack made this impractical. All white men were armed and had to be armed. Instead of empowering poor whites, blacks who had occupied a poorly defined status between indentured servant and slave were reduced to hereditary chattel slavery. In this way, poor whites could be economically advantaged without the upper class having to give up its privileges. Oh, man. In the Haitian Revolution of the 1790s, the slave population successfully threw off their French masters. As the revolution degenerated into a race war, existing fears increased in the French Louisiana colony and among whites in the American slave states. When the first U.S. official arrived in New Orleans in 1803 to take charge of the new American possession, the planters sought to have the existing free black militia disarmed and otherwise exclude free blacks from positions in which they were required to bear arms. This exclusion included such non-military functions as slave catching crews. The New Orleans city government also stopped whites from teaching fencing to free blacks, and then when free blacks sought to teach fencing, the city similarly prohibited their efforts as well. Oh, man. Arms restrictions on free blacks increased dramatically after Nat Turner's rebellion in 1831 caused the South to become increasingly irrational in its fears. In response to Turner's rebellion, the Virginia legislature made it illegal for free blacks to keep or carry any firelock of any kind, any military weapon, or any powder or lead. Isn't that amazing? The fear of armed blacks had become so extreme that dogs were considered weapons. Maryland, did you know that Maryland was once considered part of the South? Back in Civil War days, that was the case. Maryland prohibited free blacks from owning dogs without a license and authorized any white to kill an unlicensed dog owned by a free black. So they had to register their dogs. You know, we all have to do that now, don't we? Funny how freedom lost in one race eventually seeps into all races. Maybe we should not restrict each other's freedom. Mississippi went further and prohibited any ownership of a dog by a black person without even a provision for licensed ownership. Provisions in the 1834 Tennessee Constitution further reveals whites' increasing fear of armed blacks. Article 11, Section 26 of the 1796 Tennessee Constitution read, quote, that the free men of this state have a right to keep and bear arms for their common defense. The 1834 Constitution was revised to say that the free white men of this state have a right to keep and bear arms for their common defense. That is just amazing. You know what? If you lose track of history, you are doomed to repeat it. I highly recommend that you go to constitution.org and read this entire article, written in 1995 by Clayton E. Kramer. I'm sure if you do a Google search, Clayton E. Kramer, The Racist Roots of Gun Control, it'll pop right up there, because that's how I found it. Well, unfortunately, folks, we are out of time. I apologize for going over in segment four, but it was all good stuff, certainly very important stuff. Again, go ahead and do a Google search on Rick Ector, Legally Armed in Detroit, and you can find out more about him. go to Amazon.com and search on Ark of Justice by Stephen Boyle for a good read. And while you're on Amazon, go ahead and check out Civilian Combat to Concealed Carry book by Skip Coryell. And then, of course, you can go to MWTAC.com, Michael Whiskey Tango Alpha Charlie.com, and check out all of my concealed carry classes, both basic and advanced. Okay, we're about out of time here. I'm going to get back to writing The Blind Man's Rage. Okay, folks, that about wraps it up for this week's episode of the Home Defense Show. Until next week, remember, your purpose in life is to find something greater than yourself and serve it. Always remember, God, family, country, in that order. It's important how you live, but it's equally important how you die. Your family and the ones you love need your protection, so train, always train, stay alert, stay alive. Until next week on the Home Defense Show, this is your host, Skip Coryell. God bless you, God bless your family, and God bless America.
Thank you for joining us this week on The Home Defense Show. Now, get out there and protect the ones you love. We'll see you next week with more of the best in home defense.
Bye-bye, boys!
Have fun storming the castle!